Are you a pathologic accommodator? Okay, wait, what did I just say? Yeah, I asked you if you're a pathologic accommodator. You see, many years ago, when I was a practice owner, one of my longtime coaches looked at me and said, "Jennifer, you're a pathologic accommodator." Now, I laughed because it sounded kind of funny. But that's also because what we often do when people point things out that are true, but perhaps we're not really quite ready to own. That was a long time ago. And what I've learned since then is that chronic overaccommodation is actually really common. It's not that people who do this, which there are a lot of us, you know, it's not that we have a personality flaw. It's more like we have a habit. We have a habit of saying yes or not saying no. But what happens, it's kind of like a slow leak. Like imagine you're in a rowboat and you're drilling lots of tiny holes in that rowboat. A lot of times we don't notice it at first, but then all of a sudden we find out the boat is starting to sink. I'm Dr. Jennifer Edwards, and welcome to the Resilient Vet Podcast, Mind and Body Strategies for Success. This is the podcast where we get real about what it actually takes to sustain a career in veterinary medicine, not just professionally, but as a whole person. And today, we are diving into something that a lot of us have as a habit that we've lived and maybe never actually had a name for it. So what happens when saying yes becomes that habit that we can't turn off, and what it costs us over time? It eroded my effectiveness as a leader and my quality of life, and it could be eroding yours. So I've been a veterinarian for over 25 years, and I am now a conscious leadership coach and a professional speaker. And I spent a lot of years trying to be someone who's very easy to work with, or at least trying to be. So we're going to get into what that means today. But first, I'd love to introduce my co-host, Aaron Shaw.
Thank you, Jennifer. My name is Aaron Shaw. I am a coaching consultant to vet professionals and teams who want to be more physically and emotionally durable so they can thrive in veterinary medicine. I really get tired of seeing great people in veterinary medicine get burned out, banged up, injured, and leave the profession that they really care about. So I knew we needed something more than just more wellness talks. Really, people need better systems. And that's why I created Project VetSpan to help leaders build healthier, stronger, more durable teams. And you can find me at projectvetspan.com. But Jennifer, I want to kind of pick up where you left off there. That phrase, pathological accommodator, where did that come from? And expand on that a little bit.
Yeah. When I first heard it, I laughed. It came from a coach, Melvin, who I worked with for many, many years, who's a wonderful, wonderful man. And when I first heard it, I actually laughed it off, like, oh, yeah, that's me, guilty as charged, like, oh, the accommodator. And it was funny, right? But it was almost like it was funny until it wasn't. Because it was almost as if I was pretending like I didn't really know what he was talking about. But the truth is that as I ventured off continuing into my life, I saw it and it landed, and it landed hard. And not only did it land hard because I started to become more aware and present to it, but I also got aware, became more aware of the impact of it. And interestingly, sometimes even laughing something off like that in that moment, as I look back, of course, I didn't realize it at the time, is actually even in itself a form of accommodation, right? Like trying to make things lighter, trying to make things smoother, agreeing, right? I honestly, in the moment, probably didn't really understand what he was talking about, but I didn't say that. I was like, oh, yeah, that's me, right? And so what happens when we're a pathologic accommodator is our default, especially when we're either under pressure or in relationship, whether at work or home or anywhere, is to start to adjust ourselves to what the room needs, right? What the people or the situation around us is calling for, right? It's not always about just saying yes to everything, even people who sometimes say no can still be pathologic accommodators, although us accommodators do tend to say yes a lot. And so what happens is we become the people who just absorb, we smooth things out, we make things work. And in veterinary medicine, I mean, we all know that person on the team. The person who's the accommodator often becomes one of the most valuable, right? Because they're the person that keeps going, that you can always count on, that's easy to work with, that says yes, just gets it done. And they're also the person who's often running on empty and feeling depleted. And nobody really gets why, right? Like, even them, they're like, what's wrong with me? So yeah, it's kind of rampant, and there are impacts to it.
Yeah, this sounds pretty familiar, both, you know, being in that role at times and also seeing others at that times. But it's, it sounds like it's more than just being a pushover, like automatically a pushover. Like this can maybe become an insidious thing that kind of like gradually grows over time and with your behaviors and personality, perhaps.
Yeah. And in fact, a lot of times people don't appear as pushovers, right? Like they can appear very strong and very grounded and very much, you know, in their power and appear very confident, right? It's something that's going on a little bit more subtle underneath, like subconsciously often and kind of underneath the layer. Excuse me. But very often it also shows up like professionalism, right? Like being a good team player, you know, working together to get everything done, being, you know, willing to adapt to situations. You know, we need somebody to stay late tonight to finish this appointment, or, you know, so-and-so is sick. You know, we need somebody to cover the shift on Saturday. Or sometimes it's not just saying yes. Like I said, it's other types of patterns that come with it. But what happens is we start to get rewarded for it. Right? People compliment us. Oh, thank you so much. Oh, you're such a lifesaver. Oh, what would we do without you? Right. And so we actually can start to feel good about being this way until we start to get the impact of being this way, which can sometimes be hard to see, especially at first.
Yeah. The word martyr comes to mind a little bit.
Yes.
As we're talking about this. So how do we end up here? How did somebody end up here? Because I don't think anybody really decides one day and says, you know, today I want to be an over accommodator. let me make sure I can double down on over accommodating. So, you know, what can happen that kind of leads to this maybe maladaptive decision-making or behavior, if you will?
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, nobody decides that consciously anyway. Subconsciously, it can be a decision that becomes a strategy to compensate for something, but I won't get too much into that right now. But it's usually more cumulative over time, right? Like it's not like one day a line in the sand occurs and somebody steps into this pattern or habit or whatever we want to call it. So what happens is little by little, moment by moment, we try to, you know, make sense of it. We try to make it work, right? It's not really, it's no big deal. It's not worth the conflict. Like, you know, I'm happy to help. You know, I'm not really in full agreement with what's going on here, but like, I don't want to make waves. It's not that bad. It's fine. So there starts to become a lot of what we call justifying or seeing the silver lining, or, you know, air quotes, like it's fine, that goes on in the beginning. And then what can happen is that, you know, each individual moment is actually very reasonable, right? Like there's nothing wrong with helping out. There's nothing wrong with not everything being your way. But slowly, when it becomes time after time after time, we're actually reorganizing our own, what I call our own inner architecture, kind of like the architecture of how we are built emotionally, mentally, neurologically, kind of in how we function and how we respond and react to things. And so then what happens is our own needs, our own voices, our own actual opinions start to become less of a priority and just start to kind of get pushed aside for the sake of whatever else is present in that moment. We think about these sorts of things in especially when we talk a lot about burnout, we talk a lot about fatigue and getting tired. And it's actually not necessarily just that or even that at all. It's just living inside of a low grade level of, I'll call it like a wrongness, little by little by little over time when things just feel like they're off, but you're not really sure why. And oftentimes what happens is we start to see that our values are being compromised, but we're not putting that as a priority because we're putting everything else as a priority. And then all of a sudden we find ourselves that we look around and we're sitting here in a life that's not really aligned with what's important to us and what works for us and our well-being and our happiness and our values. And, you know, it might be a feeling that integrity is off or quality of care is off, or that our autonomy, our agency might feel like it's all of a sudden gone away. And like I said, it's often very subtle, kind of insidious, running in the background and kind of creeping up on us. And again, it's a result of making everyone or everything else's values, needs, wants, desires a priority. And we don't have words for this a lot. And so we say, oh, it's just stress. I'll just push through, you know, what's wrong with me? And the resentment starts to creep in, right? And then we're like, oh, what's wrong with me? Why am I so resentful? They didn't do anything wrong. All they asked me to do is cover Saturday and I agreed to do it. Like, why am I resentful, right? And so then all of a sudden we start to get into this cognitive dissonance and a cognitive like confusion, not really understanding what's going on and why am I so unhappy?
Yeah, that word wrongness, that low-grade wrongness. Yeah. I think it's interesting, and it can, you know, as you explain this, I can see how it can be so subtle and so gradual that by the time people recognize it, perhaps they're already well on their way, if you will. Like they've really kind of felt this, you know, accommodating over and over and over again is subtle. And I like your example too of there's not like one major thing that sets it off. Like, you know, covering a Saturday isn't the end all, but eventually maybe there's a straw that broke the camel's back. Like there's just one final thing where something finally lights up and maybe somebody says, wait a second, what's going on here? You know, I can see how people could really recognize that.
Right. And then what's happened by the time a person gets to that point is now not only whatever initially had them saying yes is still there, but now they've created an identity around it. Right? It's how they see themselves, but more importantly, it's how others see them and what other people expect of them. And we, especially in veterinary medicine, we normalize this. In fact, like I said before, we reward it. And especially, you know, obviously vet med is emotionally charged. It's busy. It's chaotic. There's a lot going on. And it can also be easy to write these feelings off and attribute them to other things. Like, you know, it's just a typical Tuesday. So of course I feel like this, like, cause things are chaotic right now. We're overloaded with appointments, the phone calls, the meds, like all the things. It's really easy to just not even notice that there's this pattern and undercurrent running in the background, which again is part of why I'm so passionate about the work that I do with people. Because oftentimes when leaders come to me, what they say they want to work on, we do work on it, but it's rarely actually the thing that's standing in their way or having them not feel great. And then all of a sudden we come to the truth of what's really going on. And they're like, oh my gosh, never in a million years would I have thought that I was doing that, and B, that would have had this kind of effect on me. And so it's really fascinating kind of the way we process and function sometimes.
Yeah. Well, this is a great conversation because I think that, you know, for you to share that, you've been there, done that. You know what this is like. You've been perhaps at one point labeled a pathological accommodator and had to wear the sweatshirt that goes along with it. And so everybody kind of knows. But you mentioned that it really kind of eroded your own effectiveness when you were, you know, as a practice owner. So from that inside view, kind of like been, you know, that been, been their view. What did that look like from the inside?
Yeah, it looked like a lot of different things. And what's interesting is that I was always very nice. I was very accommodating, right? But was not always the greatest at setting boundaries or holding people accountable. I also found that there was a low grade level of resentment present that I couldn't really put words to, but yet I knew that it was there and thought, oh, it's just the stress of business ownership. Interestingly, what happens is we start to resent other people, but it has nothing to do with the other people, right? But of course, we don't know that in the moment. And so what happens is we just continue to just give and adjust and absorb and take on everything. And like, oh, it's okay. You know, if I had an employee who was late multiple times, I'm like, yeah, it's right. Or somebody like, I really need this day off and we're short-staffed. I'd be like, oh, we'll make it work. And again, there's nothing wrong with working with people. In fact, as an advocate of conscious leadership, I think we need to accommodate people more in some situations than we are. So I don't want to give the wrong impression. But for me, it started to become almost pervasive and in a way that didn't work for the practice, didn't work for me, and a lot of times did not work for even my employees, right? So what also would happen is sometimes when we're doing this, we're not really being authentic. Like what I might have been thinking, even if I wasn't aware of it, and what I was actually saying didn't always match. And what happens is, I mean, this is all energy, right? Like how we show up, the vibe we give off, the authenticity that we bring to a situation. We're not fooling anyone, right? And so we think we're like, oh, I'm just going to be nice about this. Well, we're not fooling anyone. And so I see it mostly now in retrospect, although I do remember one comment one time from an employee when they used the word passive aggressive. And I get now that when people have low grade resentment, but they're trying to pretend that it's not there, and like I said, you're not fooling anyone, it does come across in a bit of a passive aggressive way because you are resentful, but you're trying to nice, like wash nice over it. And that doesn't really work. I also found that as a leader, and again, now more of like what I see in other leaders as well, because, you know, I wasn't alone in this experience, is that people stop really knowing what to believe from you, right? Like, does your yes really mean a yes? Or is there going to be maybe a sigh later? Or with some people, I didn't do this as much, but like, maybe I did and I didn't realize it, but like a comment later, right after the yes. And so there starts to become almost like a lack of trust and not really knowing what to expect from someone other than the fact that they're going to always come around and accommodate. And so, yeah. And so it doesn't work for anyone. And then I think a lot of times the accommodator, like I said, gets resentful and then starts to wonder, like, why are they doing this to me? When really this has nothing to do with the other people.
So I imagine it also affects how you see yourself over time.
Oh, 100%. Everything, again, part of the reason I love my work so much is everything goes deeper than behavior, right? So the outward behavior is the yes that comes out of the mouth. But this is an identity level situation that's going on. We start to identify as it is my job to hold it together for everyone. It's my job to make it work, or my needs. You know, I have needs, but they're not as important as other people's needs. Or I'm stronger than other people, so I can tolerate more. For some people, it's just not even having self permission to take up space, or have their needs or their wants or desires to take up space. You know, to even be on the table, right? So we can look at this behavior, and people might recognize in themselves, yeah, I do say yes a lot, or I don't always stand for what I believe, or stand true to my values sometimes. And again, occasionally, if it's intentional, great. There's nothing wrong with compromising and sacrificing and for the greater good. But I'm talking about when it's pervasive. A lot of people will, you know, read an inspiring book and be like, just say no more, right? And so then they go off and they try to just say no more. And it's like New Year's resolutions. When we strong arm ourselves into just changing behavior without necessarily looking at the underlying patterns that are driving our behavior, the changes often don't last. And then we find ourselves right back into these default ways of operating and then get even more frustrated with ourselves because now like, oh, here I am again. Like I just can't even change. The reason for that, the reason these default patterns start to take back over is because they're usually rooted in fear. And fear is very, very, very powerful. Very powerful. And especially when we're not aware of it. Fear of conflict, fear of not being liked, fear of upsetting someone, right? And none of us want those things. None of us want to not be liked. But when those things are driven by fear, it becomes about avoiding those experiences versus giving, right? So we can accommodate from the energy of giving, or we can accommodate from the energy of avoiding something bad. The behavior is the same, but what's behind it is very different. And in one case, we might have a choice about it, and in the other case, we might not. So we avoid the conflict, we avoid being disliked, we avoid upset. And it's not about giving to others. It's about actually energetically, it's actually about protecting ourselves. And even just living inside of the experience of that need to protect self or fear is in and of itself disempowering and starts to drain on our energy and drain on our well-being over time.
Okay. So there's somebody listening right now and they're nodding their head and like, okay, I'm being called out here, and they want to stop automatically caving. But how do you do that without becoming the person that everybody dreads working with? And I think this is where the pendulum our brain may automatically swing to the extreme of the other side. Because I think that it is really the fear that keeps this pattern in place, keeps this behavior in place. So we're so afraid to change anything that maybe there's more comfort in just trying to endure this discomfort and the resentment and all these other things you just talked about. So what is somebody to do?
Yeah. That's a really interesting point. And I loved how you said like that there's actually more comfort. It's very interesting how we as people keep things in place that make us miserable, because that is actually more comfortable than the idea of facing a fear or implementing change. It's not any one person. It's kind of pervasive human behavior in a lot of ways. And that concern of like, well, I don't want to be the one everybody hates and nobody wants to work with me. In other words, I don't want to become a jerk, right? But here's the thing. That's a legitimate fear-ish. If you're worried about becoming a jerk, I can tell you most likely you are never going to become a jerk. Like people who truly are not nice to work with, people who truly are just toxic, they're not sitting around worrying about being toxic and worrying about people not wanting to work with them. So again, though, having your behavior and the way you operate and the way you give and accommodate others being driven from a desire to, you know, I'll state it in the negative, to not be that unpleasant person is not the same as that coming from being afraid of it, right? So just that differentiation is a different energy. And sometimes they're a little hard to unmarry, right? Like, well, yeah, I want people to like me. But is it being driven by a fear, or is it being driven by you truly want to just help for the sake of helping? And there's no right or wrong here. Like, this is not about bringing in judgment, because we all do all of this. It's just a matter of starting to look for yourself at where does it show up for me? You know, maybe it's perfect and no problem. And you're listening to this episode, you're like, nope, I got it. But if this idea is resonating, it's not about like, well, I can never help anybody again and I can never take that Saturday shift. No, it's not about that. It's about bringing an intentionality to it and a little bit of a choice, right? It's about saying, I'm not comfortable with the way this dog is being handled. I'm not just going to pretend like it's okay. It doesn't mean you have to stand up and start yelling at people, right? There are ways of kind of bringing in that yes and. So a lot of times people, it's like A or B, it's black or white. You're either the over-accommodator or you're the person who's difficult because now you're not accommodating. But there's a whole middle section in there. And that's kind of what I'm pointing towards in this conversation is a term that I like is grounded self-advocacy, right? It's in the middle. It's that yes and. It's that I can be nice. I can be respectful. I can be kind. I can be all of these things. And I can be a stand for what I need, right? So it's we're not putting up walls. We're not starting fights. We're not all of a sudden just saying no to everything. But how do you articulate, like, here's how I operate. Here's what I need. Here's what I am willing to tolerate and not to tolerate. Here's what I can't do this that you're asking. However, here's what I could offer instead, right? It's about bringing an intentionality to it so that it works for everyone, right? It's not about being selfish. One of the most common ideas out there, and there's many quotes about it. Brené Brown talks about it, about the idea that clarity is kindness, right? And when we're clear, it serves us, but it also serves the other person, right? So now they know what you want. They know what you need. You give them the opportunity to help. And it just like opens up the lines for communication, right? So we're not shutting people down. We're just not abandoning ourselves to just say yes all the time. And then we just start to, again, all of a sudden one day we wake up and we look around and we find ourselves in this life that we're like, where did I go? Like, what about me? Like how all of a sudden, why do I have the schedule at work that never works? All of a sudden, why am I even working in a practice that isn't even aligned with how I believe medicine should be? Or, you know, even things at home, like everywhere in our lives. It's just about learning how to bring that conscious choice to our accommodation so that we can be the nice, kind people we want to be, but also having clarity. And I guess I'd use the word parameters because I'm not a big user of the word boundaries.
So that's great information. What does the actual work of changing this look like? And not the tidy version, but what does somebody really literally have to do?
Yeah. Well, like everything, it takes practice, right? The cultivation of awareness of something is always the first step to implementing any sort of change or transformation in our lives. First, we become aware, and then we become aware that we have no say over it and we get frustrated, but we start to notice, right? And when we can start to notice without judgment, or when the judgment comes, letting it go, we start to learn from it. So we can start to catch it in real time. Usually when we are about to accommodate something, and again, it's not just always saying yes to things. There's all different kinds of accommodation, which we won't get into right now. But usually if you pay attention to yourself, very often there's a little bit of a signal that occurs, right? We experience a lot of things, at least a lot of us do, not everybody. We experience a lot of things in our body or in our emotions, right? So we might feel a little bit of like a contraction, a tension, a tightness, maybe in the throat, maybe in the chest, maybe in the shoulders, or there might be thoughts that occur. Because I know, you know, again, we are all built and wired differently, and not everybody relates to body sensations, but sometimes there are thoughts. And the thought could be like, ugh, not again, not again. Like, ugh, or like, ah, oh, I didn't want to, or that shouldn't be that way, or whatever. There could be a thought, or there could just be a feeling like it doesn't feel right, like an emotional kind of a feeling versus a body type of feeling, right? So there's just some sort of signal that an automatic yes is about to come out, or a lack of speaking to the no, right? Like there doesn't always have to be a yes. Sometimes it's also just not saying no or not standing up for what you believe. And inside there may be a little like, Just not, something's off here, right? And that's often when we know that we're about to say or do something, or something around us is happening that's not quite true to ourselves or in alignment with who we really are. So we can start out by just starting to notice that signal, not trying to change anything, not trying to like change our behavior and speak up and do all these things right away, but just starting to notice it. And then asking yourself, what do I actually think here? Right? What do I actually want, or what do I actually feel or believe? Again, you don't have to tell anybody else. You don't have to act on it. You don't have to do anything. Just starting to notice, what is your truth right now in this moment? That in and of itself is practice. It does not come automatically for a lot of people, especially for those of us who have spent years not asking for what we need or not speaking up about how we feel about things. And then kind of like what you teach people, you know, when it comes to their bodies, it's small reps, right? It's baby steps. It's not taking on, you know, the whole gym at once. It's little baby steps, and not trying to address high stakes, high pressure situations, potential high conflict situations. It's practicing in those low impact moments, right? Maybe the easy times. And you can just self-advocate a little bit more. And try new ways of expressing, new ways of talking in moments when it feels safe, right? We start to, you know, we pick up the 2-pound dumbbells at first and start doing curls. And eventually we can start curling the 15-pound dumbbells, but not on day one. It's the same thing with all of our self-development work, with all of our self-awareness work, same exact thing. It's little teeny tiny baby steps with permission and acceptance and tolerance of self in the process. So we hold our own hand as we go through this versus wagging our own finger at us. And so when we practice, again, just like you talk about the veterinary athlete prepping before the game, it's the same thing here. Like, we build these skills. We build the skills of awareness, of consideration, of, I'll use the word analysis or evaluation, and eventually the communication, which I can't get into today, but I may do a whole nother episode on communication, so that when those bigger, more important moments happen, we are now ready to actually do what's in our best interest in those moments.
Yeah, I love that. I think we all need to be a little more humble and patient with ourselves and recognize that things take time. And I know we all want the immediate, you know, once we recognize, you know, something that we would like to change in ourselves, even if we can listen to this episode, understand everything you're saying and say, yes, that's me. I'm that person. I want to change that and just want to flip the switch and have it be immediate. We know that it's not that easy. And I think that giving ourselves, you know, as you said, like these little tiny goals, setting ourselves up for success, it may seem underwhelming at first, but like anything else with a human body, if you do these tiny changes in 3 to 6 months, you are like a different person. It's just having that, that time to give yourself some grace, practice, you know, small, set yourself up for success. So I love those points. But I think this conversation is going to hit different for a lot of different people, because it was really naming something that, you know, may have been there for a long time, but hasn't really had a name for some people. So before we wrap up, what would you say are 3 takeaways for someone who's ready to do something about this right now?
Okay. Yeah. So if I were to think about, just like, again, you and I are always very committed to bringing people these actionable steps that they can implement, hopefully, you know, pretty soon in their lives, if not right away. The first thing that would come to my mind would be some of the best learning, and I tell my clients this all the time, is that some of our best learning is retrospective. When we allow that, right? When we can look back and see situations where we did not apply whatever it is we're trying to apply, but learn from it, that is some of the best gold in learning. So if you do an inventory just kind of looking back over the last week or two, and not, again, not judging yourself, that's not what this is about, but looking honestly and say, like, okay, what is maybe one or two moments where I said yes, but that's actually not what I really meant that I wanted to say, right? Where did I maybe stay quiet or not speak up when I had something that I wanted to say, right? And maybe because I was afraid, or maybe because, again, going back to the communication skills, which is just a huge thing for a lot of people, not knowing how to say it in a way that doesn't incite defensiveness or a conflict, right? So we're not trying to fix anything yet. You're just starting to, again, cultivate that awareness, see it clearly, because awareness will always precede any action. And if we're not aware, how do we know what to work on? The second thing I would say is think about it from a values perspective. And again, values conversations are one of my biggest passions also, because they really underlie almost everything that we do in ways that most people don't even realize. And it's so powerful when we start to discern that. But if you are, whoever's listening, you know, if you are aware of some of your own values, and a way to know that, like, again, do another episode on this, but just think about something that's just really important to you, right? Just something that's so important to you that's likely associated with one of your values. And just think about a situation where one of them has been compromised, right? You don't have to make a whole list, just find one. And just think about, what do you keep setting aside that's important to you in the name of keeping things smooth, right? So name it specifically. It could be integrity, autonomy, equality, honesty, kindness, loyalty, trust, like whatever. You know, you can go online, Google values lists, and you'll find tons and tons and tons of lists of values that you can start to look at. So what are you setting aside that's important to you in the name of keeping the peace, smoothing things over, making things work? And then ask, what would it look like to honor that value even 10% more in this coming week? You know, think, even just imagine what might come up in the week ahead. 10% more, you might say, oh, well, when this happens, I could do that. Or when she or he says this, I could respond this way. And if you want to take it, here's like a little bonus exercise. Then you could actually even start to look at, and then what's actually going to get in my way of doing that? That's like the bonus AP class. And the other thing is starting to just practice the language, like I said earlier, before you need it, right? It's very hard in the moment to come up with how to say things productively, collaboratively, non-offensively. You know, you cannot control the behavior of other people. If they're going to get defensive or get upset, that's their response, that's their work, that's them. However, we also can learn to communicate in ways so that what we want to communicate lands in a way that's less likely to incite that in somebody else, right? So speaking out loud, speak to the mirror, speak to a friend, like whatever, start to practice how to maybe express yourself in a way that's more empowering. And those reps alone, like we just talked about, I think over time, that alone, if you do nothing else but those three things, would start to really make a huge difference. You know, again, not about becoming the no person, but becoming the yes and person. Yes, I say yes sometimes. Yes, I accommodate sometimes. And I do that when it works for me, when it works for other people. And sometimes I don't. And that's actually also okay. So it's been a great conversation, Erin. These kinds of topics, as you know, are near and dear to my heart because they are subtle and they are often disempowering, but have the opportunity to go to very empowering, right? And in either way, make a huge impact in our lives. So if today's conversation resonated with you listeners out there, if you recognize yourself at all in this, just remember that you do not have to choose between being someone people love working with and being somebody who knows where you stand. They are not opposites, and they actually coexist very well when you know and understand how to have that happen. Please come visit me at my website, drjenniferedwards.com. It's doctor with a DR. And if you go to my website, I do have a free resource for you. It's called the Conscious Leadership Compass. And it's right when you get on my landing page, it pops up right there for you. And it's free. And it's a practical tool for in the moment to recognize your own patterns and how you're showing up, whether under pressure or in conflict or any other situation, and how to very quickly find your way back to leading and living with intention. So I hope to hear from you. And Aaron, how can people follow up with you?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that this has been it's been a great thing to hear your perspective on this pathologic accommodating. I think this is such an amazing opportunity for people to perhaps break free from or evolve from, that will help them thrive and be more resilient in vet med, which is exactly what this whole podcast is about. And so thank you for sharing your personal perspective and skills in this. Again, my name is Aaron Shaw. You can find me on LinkedIn. I do coaching and consulting with vet professionals and teams who help them help you build physical and emotional durability so you can thrive in vet med. And we are grateful for you listening to us. Check us out on our website. Jennifer gave hers. Mine is projectvetspan.com. And until next time, thanks for listening.
Bye.